Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Awards from the James Beard Foundation are among the most coveted in the restaurant world. They are providing further proof today that St. Louis has a well-established place in the realm of good food and fine dining. Two of the Beard Awards presented this week are now in St. Louis. Joining me in studio to talk about what it means to the winners and to the community are Kevin Noshen, is chef and owner of the Sydney Street Cafe, named Best Chef Midwest. Alex Donnelly is co-owner of Joya's Deli, recipient of the James Beard America's Classic Award. And Catherine Claney is managing editor of Sauce Magazine. Thanks all for being with us. And Kevin and Alex, congratulations.
Thank you.
Big week for you guys. But I'm going to start with Catherine. Because, Catherine, give us the overview. This really kind of puts St. Louis once again at the center of the epicurean world. We have a fine spot here, don't we?
We absolutely do. Yeah. So the quick equivalent that I give a lot of people is that the James Beard Awards are basically the Academy Awards of the restaurant industry. For people who may not be familiar, the James Beard Foundation is the preeminent culinary organization in the country. James Beard himself was a cookbook author and culinary instructor who inspired a generation of professionals in the 1940s and 1950s. And the foundation that now bears his name has continued his mission of fostering culinary education and really honoring chefs and leaders in American food culture. So each year they celebrate these individuals at their annual awards gala. And this year it was in Chicago it was Monday night, May 1st, at the Lyric Opera House. And we had the good fortune to have two winners this year. So,
well, again, congratulations to you, gentlemen. Kevin Noshen, let's see what this means to you. What does it mean to you? I mean, it's a big deal.
It's overwhelming. It's huge for our city, huge for our team, and it's like we're floored. I'm still like somewhat disbelief.
Well, I did see some pictures taken of you at the gala afterwards. It looks like you were kind of thunderstruck by all of this.
Yeah, I mean, who goes in there thinking they're going to win? I mean, you know, you're just grateful to be on the bus, and that in itself is magnitude. And someone picks you and taps you on the shoulder. I mean, I wish all five of us, you know, could get up there and all take it. So it's
You've been on this bus before.
I have, thankfully. Thankfully, but it doesn't get any easier, and it's nerve wracking, and it's kind of like, you know, you know, finding out your kid without, you know, finding out the, you know, when the kid's, you know, born and you don't know if it's a boy or a girl, you're kind of in shock. So that's kind of my equivalent to that. So I was like, wow.
Alex, a little bit different story for you because it was not a surprise on Monday night.
Yeah, it was. We actually found out in November and then they announced in January. So I have a lot more time to digest than Kevin. And then the awards for me were just total relaxed and enjoying it. And what he had to go through was a lot different than what I had to go through. I mean, I literally just got to enjoy it and celebrate when Kevin won. So
that did it make a difference that this was announced, I think, late last year, the fact that you'd won the America's Classics Award? Early this year.
It was there earlier this year. Yeah. I found out in around Thanksgiving, and the fact that I didn't get to tell anybody, that's not easy for me. But I told my wife, and so we got to share in it together. It made a huge difference. When we announced, the day we announced, I mean, our line was out the door, down Macklin. It was immediate for us. It was amazing. It was great for our little shop on the corner of Macklin and Daggett.
What is a classic when we talk about you on the America's Classic Award? What's the classic?
I really didn't know either until I went to the awards, and then I got to watch the videos and meet all the other classics. It seems from me, people that are completely tied to the community, mm-hmm. Long-standing generational businesses with unique fare to the city. And ours is the hot salami sandwich. And we just, every single one of us were completely consumed in our community and our businesses to make them better. And I think that that's what it really is for us. It's just an award that, Andrew Zimmern put it this way. He said, we don't feed the 1%, we feed the 99%. Mm-hmm. So that's what we are. We're very approachable and just a classic meal.
I think the James Beard Foundation established this award in large part because the culinary community can get accused of focusing on that 1%, like you said, and very fine dining and 16 courses and meticulous food that really can alienate the majority of the population. But the America's Classic Award is exactly that, a restaurant that has, and they said it has timeless appeal, it's beloved in its region for quality food, and it really reflects the character of their community. And so that any the restaurants that receive those awards really exhibit those characteristics.
Kevin, has there, I'm sorry.
Oh, I just said thank you.
Has there been any impact yet at Sydney Street Cafe following the award?
The phone's ringing a little more. So that's hopeful.
A few more reservations.
Hallelujah.
People are making – well, you're always busy.
Well, knock on wood.
Yeah. You're always busy. If you had to for this competition, we should make clear, you don't have to prepare anything, right? I mean,
no.
This is all handled outside of the realm of actual food preparation.
It's day-to-day. And the competition at the end of the day is really getting butts in the seat. So.
How is all of this set up with the awards in terms of how you are selected and how you ultimately win?
You know, I think the first phase is you're selected, you know, via like, you know, food journalists, you know, food critics, and some of your peers. I really don't know, honestly, how the whole thing goes.
So there's actually an awards committee that's made up of food writers, editors, producers, critics, like Kevin was saying. But to start in the fall, anybody can submit a restaurant for – it's an open entry. You can submit a restaurant for consideration, and then that committee goes through thousands of entries.
Who makes the submissions? The owners or the chefs themselves?
Yeah, the chefs, owners, members of the community can submit a restaurant, and then it's the awards committee whose responsibility is to take that and basically boil it down to 20 semifinalists in each category. And I'd say there's a little more than two dozen categories maybe. And then from there, those semifinalists, more than 300 people, including members of the committee and previous James Beard winners, vote for who they think should be in the finalist round. And then those finalists are announced, and then the winner is announced at the James Beard Awards. So it's really a mix of not only industry professionals, but also people who cover the industry.
Alex, tell us a little bit about the ceremony itself. What's this like? Would we recognize it if we saw it on television?
It's amazing. Yeah, it's just like the Academy Awards. What was really neat about the actual ceremony was the red carpet. So you literally pull up in your Uber driver, you know. And I normally wear an apron most days, and then I pull up in a black tux and walk down the award. You know, they don't know who I am, but they're taking pictures of me anyway, which is pretty neat. And it's amazing. And then the food that Kevin got to serve And it was fun, and everybody was just really warm and exciting. And the best part was chefs know how to do speeches. Speeches should be 45 seconds long, and chefs know how to talk to their crew, and they're to the point, and it's amazing. This is who we're thanking. See you later. And that was the best part, was just the over – like Kevin's speech was perfect. I mean, it was awesome.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
Kevin, what did you say?
I don't remember. I was still in shock walking up there trying to remember what I was going to say.
I have it on video for you later if you want to review.
Sure, as long as it's not embarrassing.
It was awesome.
No.
Okay, Alex, it was so awesome. You tell me what he
said.
Well,
he thanked the right amount of people. He thanked the crew. He put St. Louis first, which is he always does. And then it was powerful because it was emotional. And it was a total – you could tell he was completely surprised even though I knew he was going to win it. And it was just great. It's just so good for St. Louis. And I had my phone in my hand, and my phone just blew up. It was awesome. It's just so – I mean, it was great.
I was sitting in the press mezzanine at the top when the award was happening, and actually three members of the Sydney Street team were sitting up there. They were up here to help cook with Kevin, and I think it was Jesse and Bob and
John
who were sitting up there, and the category was announced. And when they said Kevin's name, I just heard screams coming from my left because they were so excited.
Yeah, that was
but
great.
But Kevin, you had to kind of elbow another St. Louisan to get the award.
I wanted to bring him up there with me, believe me. He's one of my buddies too.
Well, explain who we're talking
about. So Kevin Willman, he's been on it with me a few times, and I don't know. I mean, I wish we both were up there, you know.
Well, he's has other opportunities. Now, if I understand correctly, you can't win it again. Is that right? Is the award only awarded once to one person?
Yep.
You can't be on it for the next 5 years. You can't win in the same category for the next five years. Now, you could win in another category, but that's particular one you have to wait out.
It's been mentioned a couple of times that you actually cooked at this event.
Yes, sir.
Tell me about that. I mean, there were a lot of people there. How many people? A couple of hundred people there.
They had you basically prep for 1,200 people. So that's what we did. And it's kind of like, well, what do you cook for all these heroes and fellow cooks that you admire and people? It's like, what do you do? So it's kind of we went the route of like what I like to do is stuff that I know. And, you know, I come from two backgrounds of cooking in terms of my, you know, my personal where I'm from. So part of it's Polish and part of it's Hispanic. And so I did pierogies.
That's it. That's a combination.
And, and I grew up in New Mexico. So I did pierogies, and I stuffed them with crawfish and sweetbreads. And we seasoned them with chimayo chili and served it with brown butter vinaigrette and lime. And you know, and off it went.
It was tasty.
Well, thank you so much.
All pre-prepared?
Well, you know, we made the pierogies ahead of time. It would have been impossible to do that a la minute. But, yeah, we, you know, and then we cooked them on site right there.
And Alex, did you bring any of your famous hot salami?
I wish.
If they would have let me, I would have brought my truck up there and food truck.
Oh, but that would have been fun. Hopefully
they do it next year.
That'd be really cool.
When everyone's leaving. Oh, God, that would be amazing.
Right by the Uber. And then I could take people back to their hotel afterwards. I just ate a bunch of his pierogies. So.
I read somewhere that you use and sell 1,600 pounds of salami a week.
Easily.
I mean, my God.
Yeah, that's what we made, right? I just made it yesterday, 1,600 pounds a week, no problem. Normally, we have frozen reserves, which we try never to use, but we try to hit 1,600 pounds. The whole point of the freshness of our product is we try to not overproduce, because when you overproduce, it screws with the quality. So we try to hit it right on the head. And lately, it's been right around 1,600 pounds. It's crazy.
That's a lot of salami.
yes,
no
it is.
Question about it.
Let's
take a break. We'll come back and continue the conversation. We're talking about the James Beard Foundation Award winners this week and what it means to the community with Kevin Nashen and Catherine Claney of Sauce Magazine is with us and Alex Donnelly of Joya's. Kevin is the owner and chef at the Sydney Street Cafe Best Chef Midwest. That was the honor for him this week, Joya's America's Classic Award. We'll come back and continue the conversation in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Kevin, let me come back to you. You've been at this for a while. You're not an old man by any stretch of the imagination. But when did it all start? I have a sense probably when you were pretty young.
Yeah. I grew up in the restaurant industry. My family had a restaurant, and I was basically born into it. And it was in Santa Fe, New Mexico. It was called La Tertulia, which means the gathering place in Spanish. And it was great. It was kind of la-la land, and I loved it. I didn't know I was going to be a cook the rest of my life, but I enjoyed it.
You call yourself a cook.
And I'm a cook.
The award is to a chef.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
I cook for a living, you know? That's what I do. Uh-huh. But, yeah.
When you got started, when you first began to feel that this was going to be part of your life, what was it that you were cooking?
You know, I mean, when I decided what I really wanted to do after I went to SLU, I went to culinary school, kind of used that as like graduate school, and I fell in love with it there. Uh-huh. You know, I always loved food, but I really fell in love with it there and then took the trash out in a lot of restaurants. And
Do you have your own signature dish?
Good food. That's the goal every day. You know, there's no signature. It's just trying to make people happy, and that's the goal in itself.
What about variety on the menu?
Yeah, there's a lot of variety for sure.
You control that? I mean, this is something, do you sit down?
You know, I think as you get older, you try to simplify things. And I think my goal is to make people happy. So I think a lot of people like, you know, in our community kind of help that with that process. But I also try to like, you know, push people. So like we want to have some interesting, you know, proteins and that kind of thing, and vegetables and stuff that they're not really accustomed to. But you want some familiarity, and then you want some stuff that's going to kind of, you know, create a little like interest. And I think it's like important to have a balance.
Is there anything you keep going back to? Something that is one of your favorites or you think is your best work?
No, I mean, no. We just try to make good food, you know. It's I think that that's the key and the purpose is that you're constantly trying to evolve and make yourself better and make people happy because what worked 9-10 years ago doesn't necessarily work right now. So, but not the case with Joyous.
Joyous, it's like the opposite of what he just said. But he tries to make it better.
You know, in itself, totally. it's not like he's, you know, cooking is super important. It's very it's humbling. Just because you made something great one day doesn't mean you're going to make it great the next. So it's very, you know, it's consuming.
Alex, you don't, you're not faced with the same kind of variety options, are you, that Kevin would be?
I mean, now with social media and everything, you always have to be trying new things, new specials. But our goal as we get busier and busier and have to scale up is to really focus on quality. Because I'm not making every sandwich. I mean, we're making 700-800 sandwiches a day now. Yes. And it's making sure that every one of those sandwiches is exactly how it was 30 years ago. And the only way to really do that is to create systems and processes. And one of our core values is tradition. And everybody that comes in Joyous that works for me, puts on one of my aprons, is going to understand the legacy that Joyous is in the community. And that person that you're making that sandwich for was coming, that 70-year-old was coming in when they were 10. Mm-hmm. And they've been eating this sandwich their whole life. And so it's important for them to understand that legacy. And for me, it's I'm the ambassador of that, and I just have to make sure I'm doing it the same way Charlie was doing it in 1920s.
I was going to ask, just for the record, how long Joyous has been in business.
It will be 100 years old next year, 1918.
That's amazing.
You've got some special events planned for the centennial?
Yes. We're gonna try to shut down the street and do a band and sell $5 hot salamis, you know. So
the question I have for you is, what is an Irish guy doing in an Italian deli on the hill?
Welcome to St. Louis.
That's right. There you go. That's American classic. It's a melting pot. I'm Donnelly on the hill. No, not Donnelly. I'm just kidding. that's my stupid joke. But no, my grandmother and my mother, the Joyous were retiring in 1980s, and the market – they were a market that sold sandwiches. In 1980s is when markets started really dying because of the major grocery stores. My grandmother and my mother bought it from Steve and John Joya. They were getting ready to retire. Mm-hmm. Basically, they saw this as an opportunity to take this amazing market and turn it into a sandwich shop. And that's what my mom really did. So
there's the story behind it.
There's the story behind the story. The Joyous were working with us until I was a kid. Steve Joya taught me how to make hot salami. Yeah. So they have a weird thing where no woman was allowed to make hot salami. I don't know where it came from. So my brothers, actually, we all learned how to make hot salami like as soon as we could.
Catherine, would you like to comment on that particular aspect of the history?
Yeah, no, it's so weird. Now I'll take anybody that wants
right.
to make hot salami.
I think if you want to make it, go for it.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the thing I love about this conversation, though, and I think what the Beard Foundation and now the country has recognized is, like you pointed out, there's big differences between these two restaurants in terms of what they do and menu and how they execute what they do. But the fact that both are doing what they do at such a high level and getting national recognition for that, I think speaks volumes about St. Louis as a dining scene and really puts us on the map as a dining destination. This is not just a place with a few great restaurants. This is a place with a wide spectrum of what we can do. And these guys are great examples of both ends of that spectrum.
You know, there's another aspect to this that I've observed in the time that you, Catherine, and I have been talking, and we've been doing the hit list and the other things, is the collegiality between the
yes.
various owners. You guys obviously get along nicely. You're complimenting each other. I've heard this before from you and others. This is a very competitive business, and yet people like yourselves really seem to get along and have high regard and high respect and high knowledge of what the others are doing. How do you explain that, Kevin?
It takes a village, right? So, yeah. I mean, there's so many people to thank in St. Louis that started, you know, the Bomberitos. You know, I worked for Mr. Bomberito when I was at SLU. And, you know, the Bill Cardwells of the world, you know, Annie Guns. You know, there's so many to name. It's just kind of carrying that torch. And, you know, I think it's just common sense. I mean, we want to get along because it's all about making, you know, making good food and making people happy. And I think it's neat.
Alex, what's your thought on that?
Exactly. I think my biggest thing is we're all in this together. We're a city that has the quality to be on a national level, but we are slowly getting that praise, and I think we all recognize that, and we all understand that it's a lot easier to do this together and praise each other because we got plenty of critics. We don't need to be each other's critics.
Good point.
I thought it was funny at James Beard after the event when I was trying to find Kevin Willman, who was the other nominee from Farmhouse.
Yeah.
And I went down and there's just a sea of people. Like you can't fit in and everybody's in a tuxedo and you try finding one guy in a sea of tuxedos. It's impossible. And then I realized if he's going to be anywhere, he's going to be next to the Sydney Street booth. And sure enough, there he was with Alex and Kevin was right there and your wife Mina was right there. And all the St. Louis people were just kind of hanging out and toasting each other and having a great time. And it's that perfect example of that collegiality. Kevin Willman was in no way bitter about this. He was nothing but enthusiastic and happy for Kevin Nashen. And I'm sure it would have been the same way had the roles been reversed.
100%.
And what's interesting, real quick, Kevin Willman from Farmhouse is what got me on Bizarre Foods, which started the craze of Joyous.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the camaraderie we're talking about here. He recommended me to Zimmern's crew, and Zimmern came in.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I have a note that's being passed along to me here that's very interesting. There have been articles written by the press in Los Angeles saying that it got snubbed. No restaurants received a James Beard Award this year in L.A. Says something that St. Louis got two and L.A. got none. That's pretty neat.
Yeah,
neat. I mean, I'm glad that because for a long time it felt like the East and West Coast were getting a lot of attention and a little bit in the South, but really not a lot in the middle of the country. And so I think the fact that the national food media is paying so much attention to the Midwest and areas like us, I think that says a lot.
We want to talk a little bit about some of the names on the hit list this week, Catherine, just a second. But I have a question for Kevin that I'd like to ask because I'm curious about it. I've heard about it a lot. And that is that many chefs have a reputation of being tyrants. When they're in the kitchen, they're the boss and you better not cross them because they are the commander of the ship. Is that true?
I think back in the day that was the truth, you know. I don't know. I mean, you know, like I said, like we all have to evolve. And I don't think, you know, yelling at people is getting really the most production. Like I'm disappointed at times and I get definitely heated at times, but you know, it's definitely not a crazy environment to where like, you know, things are getting thrown and there's colorful language that really demeans somebody. Now there's colorful language and it's more like an adjective of like, hey, let's get this, you know, correct. But no, you know, at the end of the day, I think that it's important that, you know, I find that like just the disappointment and the look in itself is effective as somebody yelling at you. So why yell? It's too much energy.
Alex, have you run across this at all?
When I first started, I thought that's how you had to be. And now I realize my role is to get the obstacles out of the path for my team. So instead of being the pulling the business forward, I'm more or less the support crew behind my business. They all know what to do, and a fine-tuned machine is me standing around smiling and talking to the customers, as I'm sure you understand too. So that's the correct way I feel to run a kitchen. So
there's definitely that Gordon Ramsay stereotype out there of screaming and pot throwing and but at the end of the day, you guys aren't the only people in the kitchen. You have a team back there that has to work with you and execute. And you have to be on the same team and all be working toward the same goal. And you can't do that if you're throwing a sauce pot at someone. So.
Well, I mean, just think about it pragmatically.
Right.
Like, if you're cooking something and someone's telling you that you're a piece of shit or something like that, then, you know, I mean, how productive is that? You're going to be, you know, basically you kind of clam up.
It's demoralizing.
So, right.
Yeah, and then you don't want to work for that person anymore.
But I also don't think that you should, you know, be like, oh, it's okay.
Right.
That. There has to be discipline. And there has to be like, hey, listen, you know, you're responsible for your actions. And you're not really concentrating right now.
Right.
And this isn't accepted. But, you know.
Yep. Also, you don't want people in the dining room to be listening to somebody screaming off in the background. That doesn't work.
No,
that
sir.
Work. Well, let's take a break on this part of the conversation for a moment now and turn to Catherine for this month's hit list. We've got four of them. Catherine, where are you going to start?
We do. We're going to start in Lafayette Square with Polite Society, which just opened. So this is a very classy little establishment. It opened in the old Ricardo space, and it's actually three separate storefronts that are connected. So it's kind of cool space. You go in and there's this bar that is this massive construction of black metal piping and wooden shelving, and it's like hovering over the actual bar. It's very cool. But it's very elegant, very cozy. What we really like there, you start your night with the portobello mushroom starter, which was tempura battered and served with a poblano pepper coulis. You can also try, if you want to go a little more indulgent, the Gulf shrimp with cheese grits, which has a lime crema. And then entrees we really like. The chicken duet was chicken two ways, basically. It was a roasted chicken breast and then a confit leg that was served atop a sweet savory Johnny cake. And then if you, again, want to go more indulgent, there's divers scallops that are really nice and fat. And they're seared with butter and then topped with more lemon pepper butter and seasonal vegetables. So that was a fun one to try.
Sound too good to you guys?
Yeah.
Yum. Yum, yum. Go ahead.
Spice of India is out in the county. It's on Page Avenue. And that's tucked away. It's tucked away on a little strip mall, but it's very busy already. The owner owns a couple, I think two other Indian restaurants in Edwardsville and another one in the county. We really liked the street food section of the menu. The Bhel Puri was a mixture. It sounds odd, but it's a mixture of puffed rice, peanuts, chopped tomatoes, tamarind chutney, a mint chutney, raw onion and cilantro, and it's actually a very common street food snack in India, and we really liked that. It's got the nice hits of spicy and sweet and peppery, and it's lots of texture. The butter chicken was a great entree. It's creamy tomato-based sauce that you can scoop up with naan or puri, which is a South Indian fry bread, sort of like almost like a deep-fried naan. It was really, really nice.
Indian restaurants really have a place here in St. Louis.
They do. We have quite a few of them.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's next?
Patois Eatery and Social Lounge. So this one is right down here at the intersection of Washington and Jefferson. It used to be the Rustic Goat space. And the way that the owner described it to me is he wants to do 60% food, 40% nightlife. So there's definitely still a nightlife vibe there. There's going to be a lot of live performances, a lot of DJs. But they're putting much more of an emphasis on food. We really liked their jerk chicken. That was the thing to get there. And it's actually a recipe from a Chicago-based restaurant called Uncle Joe's Jerk. They've been allowed to use that recipe. And it's half a chicken grilled until the skin is nice and crispy and charred. And then it's chopped into four pieces and served with this jerk sauce that has a little bit of heat, but a lot of allspice. It's very, very close to the Jamaican jerk chicken that I've had before. And they also have these sweet, sticky corn cakes. They're a starter. We just wanted to eat them for a meal. They were slathered in honey butter, and we just had to physically restrain ourselves from ordering another round. So,
if I may ask, what is the origin of the term jerk chicken, by the way? That seems like...
I'm not exactly sure what the origin of the word is. I know it's a Caribbean dish. And I know that it's traditionally made by smoking chicken over pimento wood. Mm-hmm. And allspice is the seed from the pimento wood, and that is used in the sauce. So it's a really distinct flavor. I'm not exactly sure where the term jerk came from, but that's the flavor profile behind it.
Kevin, any idea?
The actual name jerk? No, but spot on with the...
Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the last one, Sophie's Artist Lounge and Cocktail Club. This is right here near Grand Center. And it's part of that Dot Zack building that just opened up. The Kranzberg Arts Center owns it. And this is almost like a speakeasy kind of vibe. It's a great place to go and grab a cocktail before a show down here. It's got lavender and gold and chandeliers. You feel very fancy and like you're in on a little secret because it's on the second floor, so you can't see it from the ground level. But we really liked, they have a couple of house-made cocktails. We really liked the Ingenue, which had a lot of bright Aperol. And then they have an extensive collection of spirits. They can make you any classic cocktail you want, as well as draft beers. And the wine list is managed by the Dark Room, which has a pretty impressive wine portfolio. And they have great happy hour deals. We really liked, there was a Malbec on happy hour that was only a few dollars a glass that we really enjoyed. So those were some great starters. So definitely some to check out this month.
Well, let me ask Kevin and Alex, are these places, now you haven't heard of them, they're new, are these places you would try? Do you try other restaurants in town to kind of see what the other guy is doing?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, when time's permitted, I wish I can go to all of them, but, you know.
Are you going just to be supportive of the establishment, or because you want to learn something from them?
Sure. I mean, there's always time, you know, room to improve, and always you want to taste somebody else's efforts. So it's a win-win.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we always say you got to spread the money around, and and the big thing is, yeah, I love going to a place and dissecting it, and I love going and seeing if they'll let me go in the back and see it and everything. I just love this industry, and I love new places.
How do you feel about the idea of people coming into your kitchen to see what you're doing? I mean, is that something you would encourage, just to reassure folks that you're running a good, clean?
I'm very proud. I would do that for anybody. And, like, everything we do is out front. You get to watch it. We're an old butcher counter. So you watch, you see what we're doing. And if you don't like it, then yell at us and we'll stop doing it.
Right. Kevin?
Yeah, anytime somebody wants to see the kitchen at either restaurant, we're definitely happy to show people.
What, you know, when we do the hit list, we also have misses, if you will, and that is in places that are closing during the time. What is, and I'll start with you on this, Kevin, what's the biggest mistake, do you think, that a restaurateur can make to just cause the bottom to fall out?
I don't think anybody knows. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it's, I mean, you could be the most talented person and have the best game plan and have the best idea, and it could flop. I mean, who knows? It's unfortunate. You hope that everybody succeeds, but you know, I'm sure there's absolute reasons. Like you know, the first 2 months of any restaurant opening, you know, it's
important.
It's busy, right?
Yeah.
And you're the hot new thing, and it's important to save all those pennies.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Undercapitalization. I think you have to be able to be in it for the long run, and that's why people always say that restaurant businesses always go out of business so early and everything. You know, it's just because they're not capitalized. It takes a while to build a base, and that the base is what pays the bills. The first huge splash of 2 months is important to execute correctly, but you have to be patient. You have to be patient. You have to be able to see it through.
Only a few seconds left, but it's not an easy business, is it? You have to spend a lot of time at it and be attentive to so many different kinds of things.
It's like anything else in life. Well, you know, if you want to be a good newscaster, if you want to be a good lawyer, doctor, it's a copious amounts of time, and you have to give a hoot.
Most of us don't have the opportunity to eat our product, unfortunately. I want to thank you all so much, and congratulations once again to Kevin Nashen. Congratulations to you and to Alex Donnelly.
Thank you so much. All the best
to you at yours. Congratulations on your approaching 100th. Oh, yeah. And Catherine Claney, thank you so much for being
with
us.
Thank you.
Great to talk to you all. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.